Right here, this is tape 54, side two. So you went to the Kennedy Center to see Elephant Man.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, this is pretty heady stuff. The smartest one was Scott Matheson. He was sitting next to me. He's the governor of Utah. He went silent to sleep. You're smarter than I am. But it's really very nice. And then afterward, a few drinks, and the president's going around, and all these other big dignitaries are. You can wander into the green room, the red room, the tuxedo affair, and go home. But that's a typical kind of thing. The invitations are beautiful and nicely engraved. And, the president and vice president, they sit in the front row with the entertainment. They just have chairs lined up in the East Room. So I'm a souvenir guy, so they get up and usually they don't care. There's a card that says Mr. President and Vice President. Scoop that up a couple of times for a souvenir out there, chair. No, it's a very, it's a wonderful thing to go in. Meet the president, get your picture taken, and in a month or two, you get a copy of the picture. I don't mean to be taken really just offhand, but it's really quite nice. It's not an opportunity I would have had I not been a governor.
Also on that trip, you went to New York City with State Treasurer Bill Rutherford to discuss Oregon's credit rating with financial services companies on Wall Street, which was lowered because of a projected revenue shortfall in the Veterans Home and Farm Loan Program occurring from a court ruling that the state could not require holders of some of the loans to pay higher monthly payments to reflect an increase in interest rate.
Well, that's not the first time I went there. I went there with Clay Myers as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we did cover that. And I'd tell them in Wall Street, I said, I don't understand you people. We've got a huge deficit in the federal government, and they've got a higher credit rating. You know, we have special sessions to rebalance our budget, and our credit rating goes down. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Did they listen to that?
Well, they listened to it, but it doesn't have much impact.
Also in March of 86, you rebuffed the recommendations of a presidential commission and said that you won't require drug testing as a condition of employment with the state of Oregon.
Yes.
You said that what workers do on their own time is their own business as long as it does not reflect on their job performance and you don't see it as a major problem in the state government.
Right.
Is that sort of your general attitude about people's private lives, that they can do what they want?
I can recall at one time we had a salesman in the drug business, bachelor. I don't know how he really did it, and maybe because he was young, but you know, he'd go out almost every evening. Had girls and stuff, and I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always good at his job. He was always there. He was a good salesman. This is not something I would do. I'm not sure I would have the stamina to do what I would do anyway. And my feeling is that the only time that it's that I have an interest is when they're working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if what they do affects their work for me, then that is, I think, a reason to discharge them. But if they want to do what they want to do in their private life and it doesn't affect my area of responsibility, it's their business.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I condone, I certainly don't condone recent drugs, but that's generally my position. That sort of comes from my history is important.
Also in March of 86, you selected 10 areas of the state to become Oregon's first designated enterprise zones.
Yes.
That was to help the ailing economies of those areas.
Right.
And new and existing businesses creating jobs in the zones would qualify for property tax exemptions. How did you come up with this plan?
The enterprise zone idea was one that had been established. The thing I find it very curious is there was communities that were more communities than the one I chose. Mm-hmm. But for some unknown reason to me, the legislature limited the number I could do that with. I was contending that they were hoping there'd be a Democrat governor next time, and that the Democrat governor would get the rest of them. But it was a matter of application and studying their situation, and with those that we could select, we picked the most needs, the needs. Mm-hmm. It didn't come off the cuff, it was some study.
Is it still done or used, or how?
No, I'm not sure how much it's used. It's not a bad device.
Uh-huh.
And among the reasons it's not a bad device is that way back again in the tape, I recall telling you that it's very hard to distribute jobs around the state. So you have to give places the greatest opportunities they have.
Mm-hmm.
Give them whatever opportunities that they might have an advantage over someone else. And that's one way of doing it.
So what kind of property tax exemptions would they get then?
I don't recall, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh. Was that somebody in your staff that came up with that?
Yeah. No, this was a state law that allowed us to have.
I see.
This was not something that was invented by us.
Mm-hmm. In May of 86, you got another Far East trade mission. And you went to Fujian, China, Hong Kong, Japan, and South Korea. Singapore and Malaysia were dropped. Now, did we talk about this before? Or?
We briefly did, and this, to the extent that now it's pretty late for me to start opening up something.
Yeah.
And that we better go to the places that know us and we know them.
Uh-huh.
And just reinforce our continued desire to do business with them.
You talked with Governor Hu of Fujian, didn't you? On that trip?
Yes, he's the man that was there at the time I signed the agreement.
Uh-huh.
And it was just sort of revisiting. That's really what it was.
Were there other people that you had discussions with? I'm sure you did, but I mean other dignitaries or...
On that trip? Dignitaries in this sense, presumably governmental. Not really. I may have met with President Chun in Korea. I met with President Chun twice, and incidentally, President Park. That was in 1979, and only a couple weeks after I was there, he was assassinated by one of his generals. Repeatedly meeting with business leaders, presidents, and chairmen of companies like Samsung in Korea, Samsung and Daewoo, and Gold Star. Places like that, people like that, and the major companies that we called on in Japan. That was part of my agenda, just again, on the chairman or president's
happens. Were things, any arrangements concluded at that point, or?
No, it was a matter of just kind of reinforcing, knocking on the door again.
Mm-hmm. Another controversy that was arising again during this time was over the permanent site for nuclear waste. They, I think, had by this point had narrowed down to about three locations, over by Hanford, Nevada, and I think a spot in Texas, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and Hanford had five of the worst sites of contamination already. It was the worst of the five sites that they were looking at, rather.
Yes.
And there were no sites in the east where 85% of the spent fuel is produced. Did you address those problems?
Mm-hmm. But this was a choice we were going to make. This was a choice by the federal government. Again, mm-hmm. Recall, I suppose even today now, it must be about the 30th or 33rd anniversary of preemption by the federal government dealing with the waste. Mm-hmm. Power plants, so it's a federal government matter. Obviously, it was comment on the part of the governor. And my comment really was that it wasn't that I didn't want it close. The fact is that Hanford was not a good site.
Mm-hmm.
It just was not a good place to put didn't say to put it in Utah or Texas or anywhere else. The other comment was, and kind of angered almost, is that, you know, you produce it all and we have to store it,
yeah,
being West. And that seemed to be eminently unfair.
Did the Western Governors Association ever address that issue?
Not directly. They got tangled up in even acid rain. You know, some governors wanted to do something, some didn't. Not really, to any appreciable degree. But the fact is that do something, find a place for it. Right now, and all around the United States, and legally, I would add, is that these waste rods are being stored on site. We have them up at the Trojan Nuclear Plant. That's where they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter then of finding a place where you can, there's a variety of ways of doing it. Classification is one, but storing. Incidentally, I said one time, trying to get a handle on this, how big of space do you need for this? You know, how much geography are we talking about? And the answer was about the size of a football field. Well, that becomes something that you can understand, but that's all we're talking about.
For a permanent site?
For permanent storage. About the size of a football field. You know, you think somewhere in this United States, they can find something that size. Now, obviously, they have to take more space than that to
all the facilities.
Clean it up.
Sure.
Manufacture.
But where the actual deposit spot would be about, sure, the size of a football field. Huh.
And I know that there are storage places in Kansas, I think. There's salt caves, mm-hmm, that are very stable, and they're huge. People use them for storage and all kinds of things. But that was never on anybody's list. Out west was on our list.
You talked about suing the government or joining Washington in a lawsuit. Did you eventually do one of those two things?
I don't think so, because I think the effort broke them off the list.
What was your relationship with Secretary Hodel, Interior Secretary at that point?
Very good.
And were you working with him on these issues?
Well, certainly we talk. I know Don very well. He's an Oregonian. He was in the body bill. I've known him both socially as well as politically. He's a good thinker, good steady head.
Mm-hmm. So, did you propose a plan for what should be done with the waste?
No, that wasn't up to me to do that. I couldn't say put them in the salt caves in Kansas. You know, I know enough about this to know that this is very highly technical. And yes, it does get political, but for me to say put it somewhere else, that was not the role I should play.
You know, and going through some of the news accounts, they listed a few of your suggestions, and I'm not sure whether this actually falls within the category of a plan or not, but you talked about moving most of the dangerous waste and studying ways to deal with the rest of it, and also putting the nuclear reservation on a strict cleanup schedule for radioactive and chemical waste, and directing the Federal Energy Department to comply with federal and state waste disposal requirements that already apply to private businesses, and that the department should set aside a percentage of annual plutonium production budget for safe disposal of the radioactive leftovers.
That to me is instead of saying put it in Kansas.
Right.
It says wherever you put it, these are the criteria you should follow.
And did you have any reaction to those proposals? In what kind of a forum were you presenting them?
I don't recall now.
Was it a letter or?
I'm thinking it was a letter, but I'm trying to. Uh-huh. The next question too was an address, and I can't recall.
You said that you would also recommend that the N reactor at Hanford be shut down if the Department of Energy could not guarantee that it would continue to operate safely.
Yes.
And did you have any response on that?
No. You remember way back when I was telling you that we were, by the Business Regulatory Commission, we had to submit a plan, a safety plan, and they ran us through drills, remember I told you?
Right.
And they didn't have a drill of their own.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you have a drill and I'll critique yours?
Going on, you had some comments that you made to the annual convention of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association meeting at on July 25th at the Rippling River Resort. I notice you smiling, and I presume you had you took great pleasure in being able to give the news media some suggestions as to how they should do their business.
They really? Invited me, and I had attended, and my job was to help hand out plaques, and I wanted to speak to them.
They didn't want you to speak?
And I guess they didn't want me to speak, but I had to force myself on them. And my whole, the general thrust of what I was trying to tell them is that my concern was, I wasn't going to say that all you print is the bad news, and you don't print any good news. But it had some of that flavor, and some of that flavor related to a balance in the news. Because if you read the news, all that's happening in Oregon or nationally is somebody's getting killed, somebody's being shot, somebody's being murdered. Terrible things we're doing on homeless, AIDS now, but not necessarily then. All this, that is news. But it's a small part of the news. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is get the population unbalanced. They think that this is the whole world. How many times have my wife would say, gee, the world's going to hell, and she doesn't quite use those words. But no, the world isn't. But that's, if you get it all coming your way that way.
That's your impression.
That you don't get the balance. That was one thrust. Second was, I did indicate there was some laziness on the part of media. And I'm not sure exactly, but I do remember in my own head that there were times when I had my media availability that we were preparing, what kind of questions. And there were some important issues that were never brought up in my media availability. And there would be other times where I would give an answer that I knew. I deliberately did it this way to just scream for a follow-up, and there would be no follow-up. And then the third was that I didn't mind columnists. Columnists are free to say whatever they want, but when someone writes a story, there should be no editorializing in the story. And I gave an example. I don't know if I mentioned it to you before, but I think I may have. But early on, I had a Buick Skylark as the governor's car. And Jack Burns of Burns Brothers was doing the gas and oil thing. He said, would you stop by? We'll get a little media attention for gas and oil and tank up. Sure, Jack. So here I am with this Buick Skylark. It's the number one car. I mean, I didn't have the Lincoln. I had the Buick Skylark. And we drive up there, and television's there, and orders from there, they're tanking up the car. So I read the Oregonian the next morning. And this is what I remember. Governor Attia pulls up in his sleek black Buick. And I look at that and I said, black? Yeah. Buick? Yeah. Sleek? Buick Skylark is sleek? And so, see, that's editorializing that here is this big, adsy Buick pulling up. That's what I meant by editorializing and writing. I had to be very careful because I didn't want to whine and I didn't intend to whine. It was just my observation as someone in politics, and I know how sensitive the media is. And I think they almost took it wrong. They had some problems that maybe I was whining, and I really wasn't. I really didn't intend it to be that way. The media is really very touchy. Very, very touching. And at times I was dealing with, I thought, were very serious constitutional questions, which they would treat rather lightly. But if you start dropping on the First Amendment, even in its outer edge.
Mm-hmm.
This is big news on the outer edge. But if you're at the heart of any other constitutional question, they're very objective about that. Our relationship, however, with the media, I think, is very, very good. Very rarely did they strain or criticize. I treasure a little calligraphy thing that gave me my Capital Press for my accessibility, because I know how rare that kind of thing is. So I had good relations, but I had to force myself with the publishers so I could give a speech.
You also talked about shallow reporting and revolving door assignments.
Yeah. There wasn't anybody there that really had any relationship with some past history.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, I forgot that. That they really, people kept coming in and their view of what was going on was not, I don't know, tempered, which may not be the right word, but with some past knowledge of what else has happened. So they are really at a disadvantage to try and write a story. Because all they know is that moment in time, and that subject.
Right.
And it gets kind of put out of place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically saying, you should have people become well acquainted and understanding and reporting the news. Earlier on when I was first there, the representatives of the media were fairly permanent people. There in the session.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty soon, they're just changing all the time.
You also commented about lack of accountability.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Well, they would agree, but they've never come up with an answer of how they monitor themselves. Let's take recent events in which there was really overkill. And you know, we've watched it on the news I'm trying to think of a recent event, I guess it was the question of it was a politician. I think he was running for president, candidate, and they were tracking him down, and there was a girlfriend or something.
Gary Hart?
Could be, yeah. And the question was that overkill? What did they do? Did they shadow them and went to court or whatever? I forgot.
Because he dared the press to.
But you know,
they
even questioned themselves, was this overkill?
That's right.
And when you have instances of great agony and trauma, do you show the people that are agonizing, whether it's the death of somebody, or do you show those people? But they've never come up with their own way of monitoring themselves. And they know there are times in which they've had an active responsibility. They, meaning this broad area of media. That's pretty much what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Some of your recommendations was to demand a continuation of the access to the governor's office and to try to record more of the accomplishments of people. Also to consider carefully what can be done to give the people in the press more background, more experience, and more depth on the beats that you assign them. You were just talking about that in terms of the length of their assignments. And also to bring readers the thrill, the pride, and the enduring liberty we draw from this incredible Constitution.
All those things are important. They may not think it's not important. They may not think it's news.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when I would be criticized, sometimes not quite strained, but for no real reason, my own inner reaction was, this job is tough enough. You really don't have to make it any tougher. You disagree with something, I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a matter of extolling the virtues of the London officials, but for someone to read an article that said Wikipedia did a good job, it just doesn't exist. So what's the sin of saying Wikipedia at least this time did a good job? He doesn't do a good job all the time, but this time he did a good job. I don't mean just Wikipedia, I mean any leader. But it doesn't happen. Now, you know, there's some speculation that the media's on Clinton's case. Some think too much so. I don't happen to think so. And that I think it's true that the media did quite a job on George Bush. They certainly thought they were right in doing what they did. But again, they didn't talk about all the great things he had done. There's no sin in saying some of the great things he had done. It's a fact of history. He removed the threat of nuclear war. That by itself, that just by itself. Certainly the communism gradually was deteriorating, but certainly during his watch, they finally became unglued. That's not bad. These are important things. But we hear about abortion and family values and all this other stuff, which, you know, I can understand that, but that's only one part of the story.
All right. In August, then, in 86, you went to the National Governors Association meeting at Hilton Head, South Carolina, and they discussed their issues regarding liability insurance, federal tax reform bill, international trade. Was there anything that came out of that meeting that was of any significance?
Not particularly. Not normally they do. As I think I mentioned earlier, that was the only mid-year conference I went to. They would have them every year while I was a governor, once in Washington, D.C., what's on what I call mid-year somewhere around the United States. The one I really wanted to go to badly was in Portland, Maine, just because it was Portland. And something came up and I had to break off, and it's really prevented me from going. So this is the only one I went to.
Really? The only one? What is the main purpose of these? I mean, not aside from the advertised purpose, but what is the main significance for a governor to go to these?
My purpose was to really talk with my fellow governors. I had to really work awfully hard. That didn't happen with the national governors. It did happen a little bit with the western governors and a little bit with the Republican governors, where the governors would just sit and talk to each other. No staff, just governors talking to one another. But the governor's bureaucracy, the palace guards, just didn't want those things to happen. They're afraid that their governor would say something that their governor ought not to say, or couldn't answer something. Whatever the reason, I don't know. It's hard to tell. But you could nonetheless, if you can't do it singly, you could talk to the governor. Well, what are you doing? You know, I'm not talking about plenary sessions and all the cosmetic stuff that goes on. Reasons for going at all was to talk to my fellow governors, not this cosmetic. I considered all this plenary stuff as cosmetic, and that's mainly the reason I didn't go to mid-year. I went to Washington, D.C. That was a big deal. You get to go to the White House. That was a big deal for me. But to go to another one of those things, I wasn't interested.
Then you made your 11th trip abroad as a representative of the National Governors Association, then to Japan, and that was with Governor Martha Lane Collins of Kentucky and Governor George Ariyoshi of Hawaii. What was the purpose of that?
Nikaido, who was at one time one of those LDP party. One of the powers within the party, and he had suggested that that we have a meeting. I met with him, and we talked about it. I said that's a good idea. I took it to the National Governors Conference and recommended that we do that. That we do have this kind of meeting. Searched out, you know, what kind of problems we may or may not get into because we're talking about one political party. But it was obviously the dominant majority party in Japan. And it was just a matter of exchange. I was the lead governor. again because I proposed that resolution. George Ariyoshi really was, he was very well known in Japan. He's Japanese.
The livability of this area.
You put a pulp and paper plant in here.